Silence, my. Morning, everyone. We're going to call the Highland County Council of Governments to order. We'll start here with the approval of the minutes. Did anybody get a chance to read through the minutes? I hope somebody did, and in which case, maybe we could move to approve.
Move to approve. I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Great. Okay, well, we're just going to dive right into it. But I have been tasked with this whole council government program thing, so I'm taking it down a path I decided to go because it's important to me. And if you don't like that, you can be chair next year and you can do what's important to you. And one of the things that's important to me right now is the way the change is on the performance of the Washington State ferries and their ferry system. And it's, you know, I grew up on Southwood B around ferries and been around them all my life. And there's been not just a financial and personnel change, but it feels like almost a cultural change. Good morning. I'm glad you made it. Congratulations walking over. Brand new body parts. We won't. Hopefully, I'm not opening, saying what I shouldn't be saying. But it's great to see you this morning, Molly. New hip. Mayor Coopville, Mayor Molly Hughes. You guys probably know Molly. What I was saying, Molly, is that since I have this position, I get to do what I want to do. And the next two meetings, you can shake your head. That's all right. The next two meetings are going to be about Washington State Ferries. And the first meeting, since I'm a port commissioner and those are the only guys I know, I pulled in a couple of executive directors in locally affected communities that have had, that are dealing with changes in the current Washington State Ferry system and the service it provides. Next month, we will have John Vizina here. John is now the planning director and still, I think, public liaison or governmental liaison, I can't remember, for Washington State Ferries. And we will also have the executive or the assistant executive director for Washington Public Ports here as well. I always forget his name. What's his name, Dan? You're not listening to me, are you? Anyway, that's all right.
Yeah, no, I'm listening.
You forgot it too.
You talking about Chris Herman?
Yeah, Chris is coming. Yeah. To back just because what we want to do is we're going to double around and try and grab on to John and talked about piggybacking on their electrification project down in Clinton. So anyway, I'm building up and I'm trying to describe the purpose of this. So really the purpose of this to me is to start a specific structure for questions and sort of critical statements involving Washington State Ferries. I'd really like to have John Vizina here without throwing him under the bus, which would be an easy tendency to want to do. So I'm trying to get a little more specific structure set up before next month's meeting. So with that, I'd like to introduce two executive directors. Aaron Berg is the executive director for the Port of Port Townsend. Aaron, I'll let you describe it, but I think he was previously a port director in, is it Skagit?
No, I worked for city government in Skagit.
Okay. And then Dan Wara, who has been the executive director at the Port of Anacortes for a while, it seems like, Dan. And we were able to connect with them on and off and have a pretty good relationship. So I don't know. I know you guys had a minute together. So I don't know who wants to start and how we're gonna go with this. I did distribute your report, Aaron, and I think most folks read through it, even though it's slightly dated. I thought it was well done. So off to it, guys. Who wants to speak?
Yeah, I can kick off and just kind of broadly talk a little bit about ferries.
and the impact here, and maybe Aaron and I can kind of bounce off a few things. You know, our challenges up here in Anacortes is they've canceled the international ferry run. We used to have two ferries that do it. Now we have zero. And we have the Sydney by the Sea ferry terminal just sitting vacant. And the states announced that they're not going to renew that run until, I think, 2031, like 8 years from now. So it's pretty crazy. It's 2031 or 2029, I forget, but it's like way down the road. And so our city has kind of led the charge on writing a letter to the legislature to try and get that, not just one, but two ferries, but certainly start with one ferry back doing an international ferry run. Our county has written a letter. Our port's written a letter as well. And I know that Aaron Berg has done a study with who wrote it there? Hobie. Yeah, the Hobie company, which is really good about Port Townsend. Our San Juan County has done a similar report. And I'm not sure if I sent that to you or not, Kurt, but I can forward that to you. It has a lot of the similar data, fairly compelling about, you know, what an economic driver it is. And it just doesn't seem to make sense. In fact, that run is one of the only profitable runs in the entire region. And to give you a little perspective on ridership, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I do have Aaron's report and our report that we did. There's 24 million riders in all the ferry system as of 2019. So once again, a little dated, but let's just say it's about that. 24 million in the whole system, 2 million go around Anacortes and the San Juan ferry route, and about 136,000 did the international ferry run. And then looking at Aaron's report, the Port Townsend Coopville number showed 843,000. The Edmonds Kingston ferry, just for some reference, was 4.1 million. So, you know, everything in this state is obviously driven by, you know, where all the people are. And so I feel like, you know, we're out here in these rural counties and not a lot of population, certainly compared to Seattle and the ridership even of the Edmonds Kingston ferry. But, you know, when you don't have any other options, it makes it pretty darn important. And so we're just trying to emphasize that to our legislature, and we've done that through some meetings. You know, Senator Lovelett is on the ferry committee, and she's pretty big in the transportation committee. So she's worked hard on this, but hasn't really had any success. In fact, you know, like you said, we've lost the two international ferries from that run. So we really don't know what to do. The ferry terminal is on port property. They lease that from us, and you know they're continuing obviously the San Juan ferry run, but you know the international ones that got dropped out, and I don't know. It's frustrating. In fact, we talked with Roger Millar, who's the Secretary of Transportation for the state, and he was like, "I predicted this 7 years ago." You know, I was like, if we don't start investing, this is going to happen. And like, he's looking around, it's like, I told you so. I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. This is not, I mean, we saw this coming. People didn't listen. And, you know, I don't know what the solution is now other than diverting more funds, getting more builds, and start building more ferries.
So Dan, what you weren't saying there, but you were saying was, that Roger Millar thought that it's the lack of ferries that's a problem. And you're basically saying that up north, you're international, and the same with Port Townsend, Coopville, right? This is all about lack of actual boats.
Yeah, I don't have the actual numbers in front of me. I read in the report, I don't have the numbers. It's something like you know, there's like 19 or 20 ferries in service, maybe 22. They need like 29 or 30 to be whole. And that'll include, you know, ferries going in for maintenance. There were like 8 or 9 ferries down. And we are right at the minimum. If nothing breaks, nothing loses power and drifts and hits the shore, none of that ever happens, we'll be fine. Obviously, it happens all the time. So, we are at a minimum. And so, I mean, like, while I lament them cutting the international ferry run, you know, 136,000 riders, That's a real number, but, you know, numbers are what caused that to get canceled. You know, it's when you think about losing another ferry run somewhere else with 4 million riders or 2 million riders or 836,000 riders, it's a challenging problem. So, yeah.
That's good. The one other thing I bring up on that is that, you know, there was a projected shift by the governor and probably the legislature to go toward an electrified ferry system, and they can't even seem to get a contract to build a boat. So that can't be helping a lot in terms of getting the next boat done. They don't even have a contract to build. Bigger's price was too high, and I don't know where they're going to go. So,
yeah, okay. I think that's another one of the issues is, you know, build Washington. And so, you know, you could build a cheaper ferry in Mississippi, but do we want to do that? You know, sometimes building it here, even though it's more expensive, you know, the money that returns to us in the wages and the taxes, and it's all spent in Washington, you know, I mean, those are higher level decisions than me, obviously, but, you know.
Mayor, let's let Mayor Hughes weigh in.
Oh, well, on that comment, I just want to make the point. It's not even a matter of how expensive the ferries are. It's a matter of they haven't been able to come to an agreement with a Washington State contractor, haven't been able to come to an agreement on a design for a new electric ferry. So, I believe it's more important who can build them the fastest, who can come up with a design, get them off the assembly line and into the water. Money, I don't think, is really the issue anymore. And the new law that just passed is going to make that supposedly, possibly, a little bit better. I've been corresponding with the secretary of the ferries, and she said that HB 1846 new laws allows us to change the way we issue procurement bids, which should lead to faster and more efficient shipbuilding. It may be an out-of-state bidder if successful. It may, if an out-of-state bidder is successful, even lead to big yards being able to build more than one boat at a time. Their schedule of one boat at a time in one new boat in 10 years, at the end of 10 years, we'll have the same inventory level we have now, because the ferries that have already been outdated will be just gone by then. So their 10-year plan is we won't have a net benefit. There won't be an extra boat or two so they can do long-term planned maintenance. There won't be an extra boat if someone goes aground or starts on fire or breaks down. We're going to be in exactly the same position. So the long-term planning is even short-sighted.
So we're going to have the planner here next month. That's why I have you here, bringing up these tough questions. And that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think that's really where my suggestion is for ICOG and others to go, is to be thinking about the strategic partnerships that could result in outcomes we want. I could totally join the unhappy with the way the ferries have gone party. Like, I think there's a list, you know, and there's much to be said and so much frustration when you know, somebody just calls in sick and an entire route's out, particularly if you're on an island or a peninsula where your alternatives are pretty bleak. And we see that all the time. But I do think, you know, looking forward, what did I read? I think 11 of the 21 vessels in the current fleet are more than 40 years old. And, you know, they want to transform these vessels to electric vessels. I think the boats run an average of 20 hours a day, according to Washington State Ferries. So there's not really downtime opportunities. It's going to require, you know, additional fleet. And then we do have these crewing issues. And I know I've heard, at least anecdotally, that in particular in the wake of our new sick leave rules, where you can essentially take up to 3 days off without any verification, you just need a beach day. You know, that's not atypical in the ferry fleet. So, you know, from a certificated crew standpoint, highly problematic when you just don't have to come to work anymore because you don't feel like it. So lots of issues. My suggestion, though, is we look at something like the Hovey report, which, by the way, the port spent $10,000 on 2 years ago, so not a lot of money. Is we, you know, we make the economic case for the ferries. We obviously have our constitutional case that we're tied into the road system. I often like to remind people that, you know, half a boat is like half of a highway closed. And just imagine the response to the community of SR20, you know, at the pass was, we're just so busy, you know, we can't pull it together. We're only going to open one lane this year all summer long. You know, there's almost no scenario where something like that would work. But even with the ferry caucus and how many members are touched by it, you know, most people in Washington State do not live in legislative districts that are served by ferries. So, you know, I think our goal has got to be to come in with Washington State Ferries, help advocate for what's needed to ensure the viability, the long-term viability of the system as part of our road network. And really more than that, I mean, it's our quality of life, it's our culture of place. You know, can you imagine looking out to Admiralty Inlet and not seeing a green and white boat plying the waters? I mean, it's just... It's that sort of thing for me, I'm lucky because my office overlooks Port Townsend Bay and out to Admiralty Inlet, so I can look out and spot the boat. So I think it's building the coalitions, and we could be doing that in this interim session where, you know, it's not beat up ferries, but, you know, we hear you, you've got some issues. There's certainly things you could have done differently. I mean, we might want to point that out because we're humans, but more importantly, looking forward, understanding the economic impact of the ferry system, you know, why do we treat it differently than other forms of transportation? And then who all can we bring to the table to ensure that this is elevated appropriately in the legislature? Because I do believe at the end of the day, this is a funding question as well as some of the operating policies. My own view is we probably need to be talking about the ability to crew boats with some lateral transfers. And I understand that's a red hot issue, but, you know, it is pretty tough if you have an aging out crew and the only way to replace them is our current model, you know, from deckhand on up, when there are no doubt experienced captains and crew members who ply the waters of the Salish Sea that could potentially come aboard and have an expedited path to, you know, positions where we need people. So, you know, maybe some creativity and solutions would be useful too. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, it was just, it was cough in the background. So since you stopped for a second, Aaron, you've done a lot of research on this. What's your response to what Mayor Hughes had to say about the 10-year plan and Dan's comments about lack of boats?
Yeah, no, I think that's where, and the, you know, State Ferry has they've got some pretty good papers on their website. I think that you've probably seen them because they send out the update. It started as the COVID restoration plan. By the way, we were always at the bottom of the list if you don't count the international run that was even lower. and now I think they just call it the restoration plan. My response is, we need to help them. They don't appear to have the necessary juice to get across the finish line in the legislature. So we need to help our members persuade more members to have a more robust plan to create the necessary number of votes.
You know, now that the session's over, I wonder if you ought to invite Senator Liz Lovelett to your meeting with John next month. You know, because as I mentioned, she's on the Transportation Committee. She co-founded the Ferry Legislator Caucus to advocate for much needed funding and improvements in service. I mean, like, this is her thing, and she might have some really good insights that would allow us to kind of get some momentum on this. And she obviously would be acutely aware of what the hurdles currently are.
Yeah, which would help us strategically with who else do we need to bring alongside. You know, I mean, this meeting's great. You know, Fort Townsend, Anacortes, Island County. I mean, the idea that we're having a ferry conversation, I think, is very valuable. So who else do we start connecting and advocating for? So at the Port of Port Townsend, we have lobbyists in Olympia, and we've had kind of supporting the ferries on our list for a while. But, you know, supporting our ferries is not, I mean, that's a pretty plain vanilla effort. What we need are specific actions that lobbyists can go out and support and that we can be working on. And we're missing that, at least in our legislative agenda at the moment.
So what do you think the start is?
Maggie Molly, Mayor Molly.
Go.
I'm on them all the time.
Okay. But I mean, given what he just said, what's the first step, Molly?
Okay. So at the meeting next month, John, you should ask secretary to come. Patty, help me.
Ruth Stello.
Thank you. I don't want to ruin her name.
That's all right.
We should invite her to come to the meeting. I mean, I can tell you what she's going to say because I have it in writing. However, she should be able to look us all in the face and see it. And hear us.
She might not come, but I can try.
You should invite her.
I will.
You should invite her. And, you know, I'm just obviously you can tell I'm fed up. Last night, you know, the ferries is doing this big dog and pony show that they're going out and having community meetings for all the different routes, a special meeting night for all the routes. Guess when the Coopville Port Townsend meeting was? Last night during our town council meeting. I mean, so I call John and I say, are you kidding me? Oh, oops.
Is that the meeting where they had both the Coopville Port Townsend Ferry and the Mukilteo Clinton Ferry in the same meeting?
I think so.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes,
yeah,
maybe.
So they didn't even separate them.
And so now I asked John if they were going to be recorded. They weren't. And then later there was a press release that they're going to record all of the meetings. So that's great. We can all watch it after the fact, but that's not the same as being able to participate and
allow for input
and give your input
right.
and hear firsthand what other people are saying and, you know, maybe have follow-up questions. It's, you know, they are not the ferries. Okay. So we're 3 years into COVID, and we all acknowledge they had problems before that. They had a lack of ship, of ferry availability, and knew, whether COVID hit or not, that they were about to have the silver tsunami, that they were about to lose a ton of employees
to
retirement, and they hadn't planned ahead for that. And now 3 years later, 4 years later, nothing has changed. The first boat was supposed to be delivered early next year. They're now estimating that it won't come until 2027.
Is that the electrified, partially electrified, hybrid?
Because according to Patty, she's kind of like putting everything on the legislators. So I think talking directly to legislators is a good idea. She's saying that the legislators are saying they cannot build anything but electric ferries because this is how sad it is when a layperson like me is down to giving ideas to the ferry system. What do I know? Okay, so I fully admit that. But just to like throw stuff out to get them to think outside the box, they have a design, they have a builder for diesel ferries. They know they're going to retrofit. They have the ability to retrofit them into electric ferries. Is it the best use of money? No. But why don't they pump out 3 or 4 diesel ferries right now? Because they can. Because they can build them, they're designed. There's not any magic to it. And then retrofit them later. But instead, they're spending money on getting electricity to the terminals and building fancy new terminals. This is why I don't think it's a money thing. I really don't think it's a money thing. They seem to have a lot of money that they're spending on, but it seems like they're putting the cart before the horse. almost. But then, you know, we all are in government, so we all understand, you know, there's different pots of money. So the legislators have put certain amount of money for terminals and electrification, and that can't just be thrown over to build new ferries. We all know how that goes. However, how many budgets have been passed in this amount of time? Those priorities could have changed. Those allocations could have changed. There's no doubt they have an employee problem, and that's going to continue for a long time. I do see a little bit of progress being made there, but you know, she sends me this form that shows it takes 4.9 years for a new hire, if he's perfect and everything goes great, to become a chief engineer. 4.9 years. And the deckhands, that is what they need, takes 2.9 years. I mean, I totally get that working on a ferry is a very unique job. It requires very special training. It's a huge safety job. I completely get that. But wow. And like I ask, why can't we temporarily talk to some private passenger only ferry boats or private ferry boats? You saw no one had a problem when the ferry ran aground that a private ferry boat ran out there to help, you know, if they were needed. It turns out they weren't needed, luckily, but they were there. And again, because the legislature won't allow it.
Or the Coast Guard maybe loaning some personnel that are qualified. But I don't know that I'm not sure, Molly, but I don't know that timeline was any different before. It took a while for somebody to go from being a deckhand to an able-bodied seaman.
I'm just saying it is different.
To be chief engineer. Yeah. I mean, that process. So they knew that process was that long. So right. If you lose, one of your chief engineers, you're not going to get her or him back in less than, like you say, 5 years.
Legislative policy control problem that you could say, look, we need these types of changes, or is that a union contract problem?
I think there's an issue with the Inland Boatmen's Union contract is really partly what needs to be discussed in terms of the working up through the ranks. That was my comment on the potential conversation about the ability to lateral in capable crew, because it sure ferries may be a little different, but you know, there are an awful lot of vessels plying these waters, many of them much larger than ferries, and it's hard to believe that it's any different than in our police departments or our fire departments, where you bring somebody in brand new, you're over a year before they're working the beat. But you bring somebody in from another department, you got a 6-week FTO, and they're working the beat. So why can't we take
Aaron, to Jill's question, do you think it's more because of the Inland Boatsman Union or a union, or is it Coast Guard requirements, or is it both? That was kind of the question.
I think it's the contract.
Okay.
And I think it's Coast Guard. I actually met a man that lives in Cookeville that is a licensed ferry captain, and he flies to California twice a month to work. And he contacted Washington State Ferries, and they said it would take him 4 years to be allowed to captain a Washington State ferry. He would love to stay and working in Washington State. He would love to work for Washington State Ferries. It's that kind of just.
And you believe that's a Coast Guard mandate that has created that problem? Is that what you were suggesting?
I think in his particular case, that's what he said it was. I can't speak for every situation.
I'm just thinking about if this is about asking for investments and improvements in the ferry system, we are constantly talking about the capital side. We need boats, right? But this is also an operating problem, an operating budget problem. Are you investing in enough staffing? Are you investing in enough training? But then there's also these contractual requirements that reside somewhere under someone's authority. And I don't know enough about it to know whose authority it resides under, but certainly that's something we need to know, right? Is it a legislative fix? Is if it's a union fix, I don't know. I never get that part right. But, you know, is it a Coast Guard fix? Who, where does that conversation happen and at what level of government and with what folks, right? Because talking to our senator or our representatives about something that's union contract control is not a good use of time or influence. But I also think talking to them continually about capital investments only addresses one part of the problem, and maybe there's some wisdom in having bifurcated messages. This is what we need on the capital side, and this is what we need on the operating.
I appreciate that, Jill, because the reason we only have the one vote through Coopville to Port Townsend is because of lack of votes. The reason we only had one vote operating Muckleto to Clinton for a number of hours over the weekend was for staffing. We do absolutely have to address both of them equally. They're equally important.
And those are coming out of different budgets, right? I mean, operating is a not... And so, I mean, I just know what I've heard us ask for over the years, which is we need more boats, invest in more boats. Maybe we just need more knowledge base in that operating ask.
Dan, when we were down at the Olympia port day, I mean, there was a very clear message that in transportation, it was going to be about focused on decarbonization. And you remember that? I mean, it was, and I had a one-on-one, I think, with one of the committee chairs. And he just literally said, if it's not about decarbonization, we're not going to be interested because that's where we're going right now. Did you get that sense?
Yeah. I mean, that's where all the money's going. In fact, just, and not only money today, but they're lining money up for the future. I think that, and you know, to the mayor's point, it's like, why can't we just build 4 diesel ferries that'll fix it? Well, like, we're not going to do that. I don't think they're going to do that. They'd rather suffer for a decade than build one more diesel vessel, in my opinion. Even though I think building 4 instantly would be a great solution, I just don't think they're going to. I mean, it's either electrification or pain. Like
Aaron, you were talking about, or somebody, maybe it was Molly, talking about bringing in Senator Liz Leavitt, or somebody was, but yeah. So to address Jill's comment, I mean, what about, you know, personnel issues? Melanie's spot on. The issue, if you live on South, would be we're lucky. We have 2 boats and we have 2 big boats in the summer, but we have some pretty crappy service. It's just been amazing. Thank goodness for the Port of Everett, where our Kissing Ride is full because people are parking in Muckleto right now. But what about personnel? I mean, if we're going to get people in the room here, and we're going to have John Vizina here, and we'll have, I mean, maybe a senator, is there going to be crossover? Is he going to be able to really answer that question? I mean, what are you going to do about staffing, John? I mean, what do you guys think?
John is the government liaison.
He's also the planner now.
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's the planner. You were talking about a 10-year plan. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but we need to get specific about some of these questions and get it all done in an hour. And I'm just trying to elicit the best response we can get.
Their 10-year plan is to build a boat a year, with the first one coming out in 2027. That is their 10-year plan now, all electric. Now, they don't have a contract for that. They don't have a builder yet. But and their plan was, that was their plan years ago, tip boat a year for 10 years with the first one coming out next year. Now they pushed that forward to 2027.
So is what you're saying, Molly, that this is important? Are you saying that No one is working on building any Washington State ferry boats right this minute.
It is a boat under construction? No.
There isn't even a contract.
For any boats right this minute.
Vigor walked away.
They were in negotiations for years with someone because they were required to work with a Washington State vendor and that they couldn't reach agreement. I don't, of course, don't know any of the details about that. I don't know what the problems were, but.
Dave Hoogerworth from the Ferry Advisory Committee that you saw the other night made it pretty clear that it was about Vigor not being able to come up with anywhere close to the budget that Washington State Ferries had suggested for an electrified ferry. It's that's the problem we're going. And Dan, that's what we were talking about. But I still want to get back to what Jill's saying. We've got staffing issues. Have you guys even thought about the staffing issues, Aaron?
Well, so in Port Townsend, we have the wonderful benefit of the Northwest Maritime Center and Northwest School of Wooden Boat Building and others who are particularly interested in the maritime sector staffing more broadly. And Maritime Center here is partnered with, I think it's Port of Seattle, to stand up the Maritime High School, which I think is out of the Shoreline School District. I could be wrong about that. So there are folks working on, essentially the introduction to the maritime community, trying to get people interested so that there's a four-year high school program that could lead somebody then to maybe enroll in the Seattle Maritime Academy or another academy and come out, prepared for a life working on boats. So some of that's going on. It's slow, it's long-term planning, but it does seem like that silver tsunami is not unique to the ferry system. It's more broadly marine trades, both on the water and in yards. So yes, and that would be somebody who you may enjoy hearing from. Jake Beatty at the Maritime Center does a nice presentation on what they're doing in terms of engaging youth and the Maritime High School in particular. Port Townsend, a bit unique. Every student in the Port Townsend School District and most students in Jefferson County go through a maritime discovery unit at the Maritime Center. So in seventh grade, every student ends up bused to the Maritime Center. I think they do a week or two that includes in the classroom and on the water training that tries to tie together a variety of skills and through a maritime lens. Some of that's happening here.
And that's an excellent long-term program. That's
It's not going to get your workers tomorrow.
Yeah, it's but if you weren't doing it today, we'd be having this same conversation 10 years from now.
Or so five.
It's a great program.
Yeah.
It's a great program. I think to speak to Jill's question, who should we be talking to? Where is the problem? There's no doubt it is both a staffing and inventory problem. No doubt about it. But when the secretary answers my question, she always seems to come back to the legislator. We are precluded by law from operating passenger only ferries or contracting with private ferry operators. That would have to be approved by the legislature and the governor. Now, I'm not saying we want to give up our Washington State ferry system. We want to keep our iconic green and white boats. I want that too. But we are in a crisis. And I think they need to think outside the box and look at some other short-term possible help during this time. And it just always gets back bumped up against legislatures.
Well, so there may be, though, some local options. I mean, obviously transit entities, ports are all authorized to operate ferries, as can cities. Kitsap Transit runs fast ferries between Kingston and the Cullman Terminal in Seattle. So they manage some sort of partnership that gets them right there.
It's the Port of Bremerton has the facilities for Kitsap fast ferries on that end.
In Seattle? The Kingston boat, they've got the Kingston boat too. So they're running
right, Kingston too.
Yeah, so I think they're running out of Port of Kingston there. And then the city of Des Moines hired Peter Sound Express they chartered one of their boats last year for, I think, about 6 months to run a Seattle-Des Moines boat. I think it was 2 or 3 round trips a day, every one of them full, you know, but they don't make money.
They don't make money.
That's the issue is how do you, you know, it's got to be built into the transit model, which incidentally also, you know, doesn't make money. I mean, that's why
at least Kitsap Transit has managed to fund it with some kind of grant funding, and they're doing real well, according to what I researched. I want to go visit those people soon. Hey, I'd be remiss as a port commissioner if I didn't have you at least talk about a little bit about the report that you sent us and how you think that might have changed. You had some numbers in terms of lost or potential tourism dollars. And I just kind of wanted to ask both you guys if you, if you can give us a sense for what the economic effect is of only having one ferry as opposed to no ferries. And with you, Dan, has there been an economic effect in your district?
Yeah, you know, our one of the reports that talked about, you know, our run, I'm reading here our letter, it was it ranged that from a low of about $20 million per year and 143 jobs, upwards to $54 million a year and 393 jobs, depending on a couple different scenarios. So $20 million and 150 jobs is like, that's a real impact. And that's just the international run of our ferry. That's not the San Juan run. I mean, that's just losing the international run. So, right there, we also have some information about, you know, for every dollar spent on Washington State ferries not captured by ticket sales, somewhere between $16 and $44 is returned to the region's businesses. And that equates to about $1 to $3 returning to our local government entities through tax returns, tax income. So, I mean, the data is there. That's what just kind of blows your mind. The data is there, and we're still losing. Like, you can't see a second order effect. It's like all they're focused on is a first order effect. It costs money for a ferry. It costs money to, you know, increase salaries of workers to attract more to come to the ferries. Like, it's all, what is it today and this effect? And nobody thinks about second order and third order. And I think it's, you know, it's the bean counters that are driving the decisions and not the operators.
Good questions for John. What about you, Aaron? And what do you think the economic effect is for one ferry versus, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure we studied one versus two. The context for our report was a concern that we might go to zero. So, you know, because we'd already gone to one, and it seemed like we were hearing that's not a super important route. So, you know, the data that we have, you know, kind of the high level findings, but in 2019, you know, the Port Townsend Coopville run, you know, it was a $57 million a year output, supporting 695 jobs, and in Jefferson County alone, $30 million in labor or payroll. So, you know, big numbers. I think probably more important, though, than the specifics, the value of something like this is that it's not just that kind of green and white boats plying the waters of Puget Sound. It does put some data to it that demonstrates the economic value and the importance of the ferry system as a whole. Unfortunately, it does also kind of rank ferries, because you look at the overall ridership across the system, as, you know, Dan pointed out, we're talking a few years ago now, but whatever it is, 24 million riders, we're looking at not even a million of them on our boats. Now, obviously less when there's only one boat, but, you know, as they make those prioritizations, I suppose one might say it's the same. There's a reason I-5 gets so much money, and, you know, SR or whatever it is, the over the Mark Clark Bridge is left with a lot of people backed up in the morning.
Aaron, I'm sorry I don't know this, but is your Edmonds Kingston Ferry run, is that down to one boat, or were they recently talking about making it one boat?
No, they seem to be mostly two boats, although I notice periodically, and I think it's more like your Clinton Mukilteo route, for whatever reason, there's an interruption, drops down to one boat, and then there's these, you know, 3-hour waits at the terminals. But they're scheduled two boat service.
Okay.
And I think they're showing, you know, back to their update, they're showing everybody in green, meaning normal restoration, full service, other than the Fauntleroy, Vashon, Southworth, the Cielo Bremerton, and that's because of the situation, I think, as to the timing here, and then the Port Townsend Coopville as they roll into our two boat time of year, obviously not getting two boats. And then they don't even show the international route anymore on the list. That's problematic, Dan. You gotta at least keep it on. It should be in red or something, like 20 fingers crossed for 2030.
That's a good point. I may be trying to get it back on that dashboard.
Yeah, I'm not seeing. Oh, wait, no, I take it back. It's on the second page, Anacortes, Sydney.
You found it down at the bottom. Jill, did you have a comment?
I mean, it seems like if we're trying to figure out what types of questions to ask John and who to invite, I mean, one thing is he doesn't need advocacy over the value of the ferry system, right? He's already bought in. And so maybe rather than trying to make suggestions, we could focus our questions on, you know, on the capital side, like what suggestions do you have for what we can do in the short term to fill our immediate gaps, right? What ideas does he have and who do we need to talk to?
On the maintenance side, not the capital side. Is that what you were suggesting?
Molly had some ideas on short-term gaps. What can we do to ensure that we've got enough operating boats while you are working through your contract issue? What do we do to ensure that a contract gets signed in a timely fashion? Where do we put that pressure, right? I would ask him to educate us on what he's seen. And I think the same thing on the operating side, right? What can we do to, you know, on the operating side to advocate for enough staffing, or who controls the contractual, why are we having, I maybe would just say, why are we having these staffing problems, right? What do you see as the big problem? And then where do we put our advocacy to make the biggest difference?
Right.
I think that some of what I've watched this do for a while, by the way, I'm on like a legislative committee, so I think I'm an expert on everything now. So like,
hey.
Right, per usual. But some of what we tend to do is talk when these people come. And my guess is that John is as frustrated and concerned as we are. And he might be able to tell us who we should be talking to and what we should be talking to them about, right? Maybe we're putting too much expectation on ourselves to know. And what we need to do is let someone tell us how their system works so that we know where to advocate effectively, because all we want is the outcome, right?
I think you hit it exactly right on the head. And we're bringing him in here not to throw him under the bus, but to figure out what we can do and collaborate even with some of these other districts and areas as a group to help him and actually the director move ahead. I bet you I'm getting an eye roll from Molly, though. What do you think, Molly?
No, you're not getting an eye roll from me. I have done both sides. All through COVID, I was the ferry system's biggest cheerleader. I moderated their town halls. I was positive. I was encouraging. I was understanding, because it wasn't just ferries. It was everybody having staffing problems. You notice that a lot of other industries, have fixed their staffing problems because they've gone outside the box and changed some of their rules. Ferry still hasn't. So when 3 years later, they've done nothing to change one single issue about their hiring, which, By the way, their employees were telling them, giving them ideas. Now, who better than their employees? Way better than us. They weren't taking any of their employees' ideas of how to help their own staffing problems. And then my final straw was when this boat just like disappeared off 2024, got pushed all the way to 2027. And quite frankly, I have no confidence there's going to be a boat in 2027. I don't know. I think in 2027, we could hear the same things. Oh, gee, we couldn't find somebody to build it for us. And we still haven't figured out the design. So I've gone both ways, being supportive.
Has anybody built a ferry, electric ferry of this size? Anywhere? Has anybody anywhere in the world built an electric ferry of the size of ferries?
I think Norway's got a ton of them. I mean, like, buy a used Norwegian vessel. Now, I don't know if the power's all.
We got a Jones Act problem there, I think. That's a no-go. You got to go to Congress for that one, Dan.
So you express
faster.
You expressed, Aaron, that, you know, you appreciated the fact that we're getting these different districts together. Does anybody have any brilliant ideas on how we can enlarge that and make it more literally sort of a cohesive group so that we get through this process and then become one louder voice than we've been? Do you have any ideas?
I wonder if there wouldn't be maybe an opportunity for, you know, kind of your AWSC, you know, WPPA, WASAC, jointly sponsored, like a 1 day or a 1 day, 2 day, one night ferry conference. So you get everybody together, and because of that, you're gonna get the secretary, you're gonna get the legislators, they're gonna be on panels. You're going to get the key players, and the context is a combination of education. Well, it's a lot of education, networking, and ultimately what I would hope to come out of that would be a plan for advocacy. But let's just bring everybody together. I mean, let's do it. Let's do a joint conference. Let's do it somewhere where ferries matter and build a program.
That's a good idea.
All right. Well, we got to get through next month. And I think I'm really pleased at what we've come up with here. I think the idea is I've got several suggestions from all of you, but the idea is really, as I've said four times tonight, not to throw anybody under the bus, just try and glean out what it is that if there's little pieces that we can do to help and figure out how then we can get together as a group and get started with that instead of just complaining. Instead of going to our legislators, like Jill says, with this sort of non-specific request, let's figure out more precisely what they need and how to help them. You guys have been great. I really appreciate the time. I wish you would have come here in person. I'm scolding a little bit. I'm liking these in-person things. Look, we got county commissioners.
Dan was going to give me a ride, but he didn't plug in his car.
The ferry to get here.
Yeah.
Was it the ferry? Was that it, Aaron? Or was
No. I'll confess.
You went to Anacortes by plane, small plane, to get to Dan's event, and you couldn't even take a ferry to get to mine. Is that it?
Well, I was tempted. We just recently bought a little speedboat. I thought about driving myself over to meet you because of the ferry timing, but I'll confess. No, I've got a commission meeting later today, and I've got a series of one-on-ones that are going to be happening shortly thereafter. And due to the one boat schedule, I didn't think I'd get home before one.
We'll let you off the hook. Hey, Commissioner Bacon just suggested that I invite you guys, in case you're available next month, to come in, sit in with us. That'd be great to have the expertise and a little more background and the representation from ferry districts. So think about it. See if your schedule fits or if the ferries are running or whatever. Dan, I know you've got your electric car. You can bring your Tesla down. It'll make it from there to here without a charge. I know it will.
Is that June? Is it June 28th?
Yeah, that would be June 28th, I believe. Hang on.
I'll put it on the calendar. And even if Aaron ditches me, I'll still show up.
Okay. In person. Jill has a comment.
Also, I think it would be helpful if entities have lobbyists, if their lobbyists maybe be invited to listen in because they understand that legislative process more intensely than we do. They might hear an opportunity that we're not hearing.
I don't have a lobbyist.
I don't have a lobbyist. You're okay, Taylor.
Invite Josh.
That'd be great.
But if you have something like that, or if you have an association that represents, and they, I mean, it will be hard to get WASAC to take on a ferry issue. We have the same problem with Eastern Washington on this topic that the state does, right? But I don't know if San Juan County has a lobbyist. They might have one on this issue, in particular. It'd just be good to know who. Skagit has a lobbyist that's the same as ours, actually. And Snohomish is the same as ours.
So if anybody has any ideas who we should invite, either, I mean, they don't have to be here physically, but I mean, to get to weigh in on this, please send it to our Council of Governments link. You gentlemen have that now, and we all have that. So if you think it's Kayla now, we're going to send it to, right? Layla. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, send it to Layla, and we'll get those people invited so that they feel like they've got an official invitation. Thanks, guys. Hey, just for the group, is there anything else that are other items of interest? We got a few minutes, and I just wanted to know if there's something burning that I'm so pleased that you're here physically. If you have a comment, Scott, you have a comment you want to make? You've been really quiet.
Oh, well, I do have one question for Harrison. What is the volume on the Mukilteo Clayton route?
4 million, I think, annually.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a different one.
There is another one that's 4 million, and that's Edmonds Kingston, I think.
Okay.
Fair? That's my question. I'd like to know.
We will have an Island County Fair.
With 4-H? Yeah.
We will have an Island County Fair.
And,
4-H? Well, 4-H will definitely have their event. There's no way they're not gonna. I can promise you that. There will be a 4-H fair for them to be able to qualify for the next level. And currently, we're happy with the way the negotiations are going between the port and the Fair Association. So we think we've got all the problems worked out. So it looks like they'll be running a fair, I'm hoping.
Good.
Any other questions of mutual interest? Hey, well, no, that was mutual. That was fair. I was hoping to avoid that one, but that was fair. Okay.
Good news, you said, right?
It is. It actually is good news. Things are working out. Anybody else? Blaine? No. All right. This meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, Aaron and Dan.